Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining us, as he does every Wednesday, is indeed Dr. Carl. Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Dr. Howard. Lovely to be with you again.
Nice to be with you. So one of our listeners is asking, are most birds omnivorous? I didn't know that they were. I thought they either ate seeds or they ate worms.
Yeah, well, think about a bird. The important thing is that they have to be able to fly, which means that they have to be very light in color.
Right.
Oh, sorry, light in weight.
Yes.
Which means that they want to have a short gut. If you are going to be able to get nutrition from grass, then you need a long, complicated gut, which is heavy. So it makes an advantage. There's definite advantages to be able to eat concentrated food like meat or nuts and seeds. So I'm reckoning that they're basically eating high protein food and high concentrated food. They would be to some degree omnivorous in the sense that both meat and nuts have lots of protein, and one is vegetable and the other is meat. Does that kind of make sense?
It does kind of make sense. That's interesting. The other question is, once we're on the subject, it's winter here as it is in Australia as well. Well, hopefully it's, heading towards warmer weather. But we have bird feeders in our garden, which we keep filled with seeds for the birds. And we love it. It brings, it invites different birds into the garden. But I always wonder if we should be doing this or not, because aren't we messing around with how things are meant to be?
Well, when you talk about things being meant to be, basically that means that we don't get an education, we don't have painkillers, we don't have antibiotics, we don't have vaccines.
I suppose we don't build concrete homes that the birds can't.
We're kind of stuck with disturbing the universe, and with the birds and the plants, we have already done terrible things to them. One thing that you can unfortunately do with feeding birds is encourage the big strong birds to come in, and they'll take over because they can boot out the little birds. But on the other hand, the little birds won't be able to come in. So we've got some big birds we call magpies in our area, and we're deliberately not feeding them because every now and then the little birds come in, and we might drive them away if we encourage the big birds to come in because they're the big boofy birds. So we're just doing nothing at this stage. How about that, Howard? Benign and masterful neglect.
Masterful neglect. No, the bird feeders that we have are designed for the little birds. The bigger birds can't actually get in there, which is so that does work. It's just an interesting thought.
Speaking. Wow. You learn something new every day.
Photo.
I had no idea that you could have bird feeders that would feed only the little birds. I'm getting one. Thank you so much, Dr. Howard.
Even the pigeons can't because it hangs off a tree and the pigeons can't secure it. They can't get to it. So it's really just designed for those little birds. It's really very, very interesting and it does work. So I'll send you a photo that you can see what it looks like. Bigger animals that live for a longer time means that they have a lot more cells, and that means cancer cells because they live longer. Right. The whales and elephants use apparently a genetic trick to avoid this. Tell us about it.
Well, an elephant can weigh 7,000 kilograms and you can weigh 70. So the elephant has 100 times more weight. It has 100 times more cells. Does it get cancer 100 times more frequently? No. In fact, the opposite. Elephants get cancer at a much lower rate than we do, and we recently discovered the trick they use. There's a famous protein and a gene, both with the same name of P53. Look it up in Wikipedia if you're a bit bored. P53 or GP53, and what it does is destroy cells that are looking cancerous. Now, it turns out that the Galapagos Island tortoises have got a different trick. They live to be 150, 200 years old, and so there's a lot of time for them to get cancer, and yet they hardly ever die of cancer. By the way, with regard to the elephants, you and I have got two copies of P53 in our DNA. They've got 24. So if we could do genetic modification to ourselves and start having 2 dozen copies instead of one, our cancer rate would go down enormously, we think. And then we could borrow the trick that the Galapagos Island tortoises have, and they've got a different trick, and they have a situation where if their cells get attacked, instead of being incredibly resilient and fighting it off, they immediately commit suicide and get replaced by other cells. So if they're showing any signs of damage from being attacked, instead of fighting it off, they just simply commit suicide and then get replaced by other non-cancerous cells. So if we bring in both those tricks, we can enormously reduce the cancer rate in humans. Have we got any idea how to do that? Absolutely none at this stage. But further down the line, we will.
That is absolutely awesome. One of our listeners asking, and I don't know what this is, please can you ask Dr. Carl about galahs, G-A-L-A-H-S. Is that a type of a bird in Australia or something?
Oh, galah, G-A-L-A-H. Oh,
yes, how do you pronounce
bird
it?
A bird which has a short beak, and they're very strong beak, and they can eat their way through pretty well anything, such as wood and even plastic pipes and sometimes metal. They're just a bird that we love here in Australia, the galah.
Oh, galah. All right, I was pronouncing it wrong. Okay, and it seems that different cultures around the world can tell just by looking at a face of a person from a different culture if they are sick. How is that possible?
We don't know, but we know that it seems to be real. So in this study, they got a couple of dozen Swedish people and injected them either with salt water, in which case it would do nothing, or with E. coli, the bacteria. And they took photographs of them at time zero and at 2 hours. And around 2 hours, they were beginning to get a little bit unwell, a fever of 1 degree higher than normal, and a heart rate increased from 70 to 80. And then they showed these photos at 2 hours and at 0 hours to various 5 different cultures around the world. One of them was a city-going culture, but the Mexico City, but the other 4 were tribal cultures away from people, such 2 cultures, for example, living in the Malaysian jungles, very different cultures, and another culture with only 300 people in the northern beaches of Mexico. And all the cultures, when they looked at people at the 2-hour mark, could say there's something wrong. So that shows that we can recognize, and we don't know exactly how, but we can recognize that a person is unwell. And I remember this when I was a junior doctor in gastroenterology, and my boss rang me up and said, look, Carl, I'm in emergency. There's this woman. I don't like the look of her. I've got to run to theatre right now. Can you do a very thorough examination and tell me what you find? But I don't like the look of her. And so I went down to this woman, and she's a woman in her early 30s, just absolutely blossoming in health and vigour. And she looked like she was in her early 20s. She was a yoga teacher and a gymnast, and she ate really well. And her only complaint was that she was just worried about the fact that when she was eating food, she couldn't eat as much as she used to. She was just getting this feeling of fullness really early. But apart from that, she looked terrific, and she was dead in 8 months. And she had a cancer of the stomach, which was stopping her from filling her stomach properly. But she looked terrific to me as an inexperienced doctor. But my boss could see something, and I don't know what it was, and he was able to say, there's something wrong with her. I don't know what it is. Let's just go in and have a very careful look. It's kind of like, Howard, you can ride a bicycle, but can you explain to a niece or a nephew how to ride a bicycle? No, you can do it, but you don't know how to explain it. And that was, I guess, the same with my teacher and also with these people who can pick up sickness. And there is an advantage in being able to pick up sickness in another person, because it'll mean that you're less likely to catch a disease from them if you recognize that they're sick and keep away from them.
Absolutely fascinating. Dr. Carl, thank you as always. I greatly look forward to these conversations where I always learn so much.